Hey everyone, welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're tackling something that's become, well, essential really in our digital lives.
No, it says,
oh. SSO. Yeah. Or single sign-on, for those who like to use the whole term. You know that magical button, at least it seems like magic, that lets you bypass the password gauntlet on websites? Super convenient.
Oh yeah.
But is that all there is to it?
Right.
I don't think so. Not even close. We've got two insightful sources for you today, each exploring SSO best practices from very different angles.
Okay.
One dives deep, and I mean deep, into designing user-friendly SSO experiences, which is way more critical than you might think, and the other tackles the security implications, especially that tricky business of offboarding employees.
Yeah.
How do you shut down access without blowing up someone's ability to do their job?
Right.
We're about to find out.
What's fascinating about these sources, at least to me, is that they both agree on one surprising point. Simply offering SSO as the only login option is actually not best practice.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too.
It
seems counterintuitive, right? Like, isn't the whole point of SSO to ditch passwords?
You'd think so, but, and this is interesting to me, holding on to passwords, at least as a backup option, actually reflects a broader principle of good system design resilience.
Okay.
Just like you wouldn't want your entire business reliant on a single supplier, you don't want users locked out if that SSO provider has a hiccup.
Ooh, tell me about it. I still have nightmares about that time my go-to music app went down and I was stuck with, well, let's just say my musical horizons were severely limited that day. But you make a great point. For the listener, think about how frustrating it is when you can't get into something you need. You know, that password fallback suddenly feels a lot less like an inconvenience and a lot more like a lifesaver.
Exactly. It's about giving users options, right? And building in safeguards so that even if one system goes down, the whole ship doesn't sink. And let's be honest, sometimes folks just prefer the familiar password route, even if it means remembering one more thing.
Okay, so we're keeping passwords in the picture, at least as a backup. But let's talk about making that initial login screen as user-friendly as possible, because nobody wants to feel like they're deciphering ancient runes just to access their account. Our first source gets into some clever design strategies, specifically recommending what they call a two-step approach.
And what's really clever about this approach is that it taps into a principle psychologists call progressive disclosure. Instead of bombarding the user with a wall of options right away, email, password, five different SSO providers, you break the process down into manageable chunks.
So walk me through this. What does that look like in practice?
Simple. First, you have users enter their email address or username. This feels familiar, right? Then, based on that input, the system can present them with tailored login options, maybe their company's SSO, their most frequently used social logins, and of course, that trusty password option. It's about guiding the user, not overwhelming them.
That makes so much sense. And the source actually lists three key benefits to this two-step approach. First, it creates that tailored user-friendly experience we just discussed. Second, it can actually make implementing SSO smoother on the back end because developers aren't trying to cram everything onto one page. But here's where it gets really interesting. They also argue that this approach enhances security through a concept called obscurity.
Now, before anyone starts picturing us hiding servers in a secret bunker.
No underground layers required.
Right. It's not about making your system invisible. It's about adding a layer of defense by not immediately revealing every possible entry point. Just like you wouldn't leave all your valuables on display in an unlocked house, why make it easier for malicious actors to even know where to start poking around?
So if you're designing any kind of online system, this seemingly small design choice, this two-step login, can have ripple effects on both user experience and security. It's about being strategic from the ground up.
It's a great example of how even small design choices, right, can have a big impact. And speaking of choices, our first source also tackles another modern login conundrum. What happens when you've got multiple SSO providers in the mix? It's like the Wild West of login buttons out there.
Oh, absolutely. It seems like every service under the sun wants you to log in with their platform. On one hand, it's great to have options, but, you know,
yeah,
it can also get ridiculously confusing, especially if you're trying to remember which account you used for what.
Exactly. It's a classic double-edged sword. So how do you strike that balance, you know, between offering choice and maintaining clarity? Well, Our source presents three main approaches, each with its own pros and cons.
Okay, let's break it down. What's the first approach?
First up is auto redirect.
Okay.
This is where the system automatically recognizes your email domain and whisks you away to the corresponding SSO login.
Okay.
Like if your email ends in @yourcompany.com, it might automatically redirect you to your company's SSO portal without you having to lift a finger.
Yeah.
Very smooth. Very smooth when it works.
Sounds almost too easy. What could go wrong?
Well, as you can imagine, it's not always that straightforward. What if you have multiple email addresses? Or what if the system makes a wrong guess about your preferred SSO provider?
Right.
That's where the second approach comes in, offering clear choices.
So instead of a guessing game, you just give users a clear set of options to choose from.
Precisely. But here's the key. It's not just about slapping a bunch of logos on the page. The source emphasizes, they emphasize the importance of visual hierarchy, clear labels, and even tooltips to explain what each SSO option does. Remember, clarity over clutter. Always.
It's like that old saying, a confused mind always says no, or in this case, maybe just closes the tab in frustration.
Yeah.
So we've got auto redirect for those super smooth login experiences and clear choices for when a little more guidance is needed. What's the third approach?
Ah, yes. The ever reliable fallback option. Good old fashioned passwords. Even in a multi-SSO world, there's still a place for letting users log in with their trusty email and password combination, especially if they're having trouble with the other options.
It's like having a spare tire in your car. You hope you never need it, but you're sure glad it's there when you do.
Exactly. The key takeaway here is that SSO is supposed to simplify the login process, not complicate it. Whether you're designing a system yourself or just navigating the increasingly complex world of online accounts, it pays to understand these different approaches and how they can be used to create a smoother, more user-friendly experience.
Okay, so we've talked about how to make SSO implementations user-friendly, resilient, but let's switch gears and dive into a topic that often gets overlooked in the excitement of all these interconnected accounts. Security. Specifically, what happens to all those SSO connections when an employee leaves the company?
Ah, yes, offboarding. The often overlooked but critically important aspect of SSO security. Because here's the thing. While SSO is great at granting access with a single click, it also means you need to be equally diligent about revoking that access when someone moves on.
Because the last thing you want is for someone who's no longer with the company to have access to sensitive data or systems.
Right.
But it's not as simple as just hitting a delete button, is it? Especially if they still need access to certain things for a transitional period.
Exactly. It's a nuanced issue, and there's no one-size-fits-all solution. That's why our second source stresses the importance of having a clear offboarding strategy, one that takes into account your specific security policies, the sensitivity of the data involved, and even the nature of the employee's departure.
Okay, so let's unpack those options. What are some of the approaches organizations can take to strike that balance between security and, well, operational continuity during the offboarding process?
Well, at one end of the spectrum, you have the full deactivation approach, the cybersecurity equivalent of hitting the nuke it from orbit button.
Right.
As soon as an employee is offboarded, their SSO access is revoked and their local password is deactivated. Clean, simple, but potentially disruptive if not handled carefully.
Right, because what if that employee had unique knowledge about a particular project or client? Suddenly cutting off their access could cause more problems than it solves, especially if there's no one immediately available to, like, fill those shoes.
Yeah.
That's where the idea of selected access comes in, right?
Precisely. This approach acknowledges that offboarding isn't always about a clean break. Sometimes you need to provide temporary access, you know, for knowledge transfer, client communication, or even just to tie up loose ends.
So instead of a complete shutdown, you're talking about more of a phased approach. What would that look like in practice?
It could involve things like allowing temporary password access for a defined period, perhaps with additional monitoring in place. Or it might mean restricting the departing employee's account to specific areas while revoking broader SSO privileges.
They actually give an example in the source, right? Something about an employee who needs continued email access after leaving a project to, like, address client inquiries.
Exactly. It's about finding that balance between security and operational efficiency. And that's why having a well-defined implementation strategy is so important. This isn't about randomly flipping switches. It's about carefully considering the specific context and choosing the approach that minimizes risk without, you know, unnecessary disruption.
It's like choosing the right tool for the job. Sometimes you need a scalpel, sometimes a sledgehammer, and sometimes you need both. But even with the best tools in the world, you're lost without a plan.
Couldn't have put it better myself. And here's another crucial point from our source, you know, that really resonated with me. Even with the most well-crafted offboarding strategy, you're not really done, ever. It's an ongoing process that requires vigilance and adaptation.
Okay, so it's not just a one-and-done kind of thing. What does that ongoing vigilance actually look like? What should organizations be doing to make sure their offboarding practices are keeping pace with the, you know, the ever-evolving world of cybersecurity?
Well, for starters, the source emphasizes the importance of rapid deactivation. The faster you can cut off access after someone leaves, the better. No more, we'll get to it next week kind of thing. Every hour counts when it comes to protecting sensitive information.
That makes sense. Time is of the essence. But speed without accuracy is meaningless, right?
Absolutely. That's why the source also stresses the importance of regular audits. Are there any lingering accounts that slip through the cracks? Have any security policies changed that require adjustments to your offboarding process? It's about constantly reviewing and refining your approach.
So stay agile, stay vigilant. Got it. But what about those cases where passwords are still part of the equation, even with SSO in place? How do you make sure those passwords are as secure as possible, especially during that offboarding window?
That's where strong authentication comes into play. And by strong authentication, we mean things like multi-factor authentication or MFA, which most people are probably familiar with by now.
Right. MFA, that extra layer of security where you need to confirm your login from another device like your phone, it's becoming increasingly common and for good reason.
Exactly. It adds that extra layer of assurance that even if someone gets their hands on a password, they still can't access the account without that second form of verification. And in a world increasingly reliant on interconnected systems, that extra layer of security can make all the difference.
Wow, we've covered a ton of ground today. From designing user-friendly login experiences to navigating the complexities of offboarding, it's clear that SSO is about so much more than just clicking a button. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling way more informed.
It's been a fascinating dive, and it really highlights how SSO is all about finding that sweet spot, you know, between security and user experience, which is no easy feat.
Absolutely. So to all our listeners out there, we'd love to hear your take on this. Given what we've discussed about balancing convenience and security, what do you think is the biggest challenge organizations face when it comes to implementing SSO effectively? Hit us up on social media. We're at the Deep Dive Pod, and let's keep this conversation going. Until next time, happy learning.